without going into sensitive areas, although of course they are, but without referring to anyone else but you and me, do you mm-hmm. do you consider it an opinion, your opinion, that you're a guy?
That I'm a man or a male?
Yeah.
Or that I have a Y chromosome or whatever it is?
Well, just that you're a man. Is that your opinion, or is that something you know?
Well, that's what I was educated to believe. In in the scientific educational worldview I was brought up in.
So you're qualifying it, but do you feel a need to qualify it, really? I mean, outside of the context of these weird times that we're in, you don't strike me as a postmodernist, really.
No.
Isn't it enough for you just to know that you're a guy, and that there just isn't a whole lot of room or need to be agnostic about that? Because it's just a sort of, like, when you're hungry, you eat. That's not an opinion either, is it? It's just part of nature. What?
Yeah, that's fine. I can agree with that. Yeah. Okay. I'm a dude.
I just wanted to double check that, just in case you were more postmodernistic, postmodern than I thought.
No, but see, I think they also like to confuse things. You know, it's just like it's a fabric of truth and lies, and that's the whole beauty of disinformation, is that disinformation isn't just like a total lie. You know, a disinformation is a mixture of truth and lies.
Yeah.
And what's really ingenious about the how they've sort of, see, eventually what I think is that this transhumanist phase is going to, at some point, trans speciesism.
Yeah.
Trans-speciesism is going to pop up in the next 10 years, okay? Mm-hmm. So this is all a primer for trans-speciesism. People don't realize it now, but these lunatics, you know, in their underground bases and all of their genetic experiments, don't want to keep their weird experiments to themselves. They want to unleash them on the world sooner or later.
Mm-hmm. The island of Dr. Moreau.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have a pretty bizarro dream life, and you know, I think I've actually seen the future. I've walked and seen the future,
mm-hmm.
and it's like Mad Max, dystopian, fucked up shit like you've never seen before. Except there are totally bizarro creatures that look like they were plucked out of Sesame Street, you know. It looks like Jaws meets Sesame Street walking around. It's just crazy. You'll see it. We'll see it.
You mean we'll live to see that?
We'll see the inception of it. We'll see the beginnings of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see that. It'll be like the big new civil rights battle. So, you know.
Yeah, well, it's kind of referred to in the Quran. I'm not sure about the Bible, but certainly as the signifier that the end times are at the end of the end times, never mind the beginning. Is you know, when the human form is being completely distorted through technology and whatnot.
Yeah, that sounds about right. It will be. I think it will be. It's just, you know, but I don't know. Could be.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. We could go various different ways of that, because your dream life is always an interesting area to go into, but then so is the end of the world. But I want to come back to an unanswered question, or an unfinished question, which was, you know, as an agnostic Gnostic, somebody who I think is quite in tune with areas of the human experience that many people are not in tune with, whether it's through your dreams or just through your thinking or through your research or a combination of all three. Do you ever feel that you have some sort of responsibility or desire to do something with that, to share it, to use it, to apply it in some way?
Yeah, I think I used to think it was with my art, but it's still there. I mean, the paintings aren't going anywhere, and I really do think that future generations will find my art and look at it in kind of the same way some people today, like most people don't even know who Hieronymus Bosch is,
mm-hmm.
you know. But if you look at his paintings now, you're just like, oh wow, that's interesting, you know. Or if you look at old paintings and there's, well, anyways, I don't want to get into it. I want to make it seem like they're,
but,
I don't know.
But will there be any future humans who will be looking back on this period?
Yeah, right. I think that as everything gets digitized and all my images are out there somewhere, I think that the, whatever you want to call it, we'll find them.
The what? The collective transhuman, yeah. Hive mind cloud mutant Dr. Moreau monster entity thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a lot of my paintings are like plucked straight out of the future,
right.
But they're symbolic future paintings. Yeah, and the older I get and the more I look back on them, that kind of gives me a chill just to see them or just look at them and realize what they are. And but I think that right now my main, if you want to call it a purpose, you know, like my purpose, it's actually my music. I think my music is going to reach a lot of people. And I think that, I don't know, I've just gotten a lot of signs and symbols and people coming to me in my dreams and telling me basically, let's get with it. Let's get it going. You know, it was really weird. Remember the other day you sent me a couple weeks ago, you sent me the email saying that I was running through your dreams or something to that effect.
Yeah.
Well, this is, sometimes I kind of shake my head, or I even have like, I don't know, I'm kind of hesitant to be like truthful or like, you know what I mean? Like talk about it because it just seems so outlandish. But that night before, I had dreamed that I was talking to someone and I was talking to him more about my music. And but I was calling them Billy. Now the word Billy has this is really strange. I had a dream about a character named Billy when I was a kid, right? And but the way he looks is really strange. He appeared to me in a dream. He came up and I don't know. He's just, it was just one of those dreams, you know. And the way he was dressed, it was really strange because he had on a black sort of cape made out of, looked like animal fur. It's like solid black, you know, and he's real pale. And in his dream, he kind of looks like you, or in the dream I had of him, he kind of looks like you, except one side of his face is burned. Looks like it's been burned real bad. But I was reading, I don't know, a book. This is a long time ago, and it's hard to remember exactly what book it was, but the whatever he was wearing, this book that I was describing, was like a shamanic sort of outfit, or what these shamans would wear way back when, was this black fur cape kind of thing. It's real dark. It almost looks like it glistens and radiates like a purple light around it. Anyways, I was talking to this person, Billy, and I was calling him Billy. And in the dream world, this guy shows up by the name of Billy. And then the next day, you said that you would talk to me in a dream.
Mm-hmm.
But in the dream, I was talking to Billy about my music, and he was telling me, let's go, let's go, you know?
Right.
And I've had, so far, John Lennon has come to me twice and sit down with me at a piano and played some songs in Charta. And he does this, I think I may have told you this before, but he pats me on the back and it makes me hack up all this phlegm.
Huh.
And I start having this major phlegm attack, you know, or in my dream, I'm like, it's just pouring out of my nose and stuff, right?
Oh.
And I remember telling you that once before, this is a long time ago, and you were telling me this like some kind of a chakra clearing something. You remember that?
No, I don't. But funny enough, I just talked to somebody yesterday, and I won't give all the context, but he described a period in his life where he kept dry heaving, like he was trying to cough something up and he couldn't. And so I was just talking about this and what that might mean in terms of trying to get up some poison that was put in someone, in you in this case, or whoever, in order to find his voice, was the thing, was the context. Because if that channel has got something stuck in it, you've got to clear it out before
yeah
what's in you can come out.
That's cool. Yeah, I've had Johnny Cash showed up, and he actually rewrote some of the vocal. He rewrote a vocal melody in one of my songs for me. He told me how it goes. Yeah.
Wow, because that came up, not exactly, but something similar on the podcast I just did with Corey, because he had this phase. It's on the podcast where he was in a kind of crisis, and this alter persona took over that was like a cowboy, and he started getting into country and western music as a result. I think partly as a result of this, that he had this cowboy persona that was helping him live his life. And he particularly referenced this song called Johnny Cash called Highwayman, which is about a reincarnating. I haven't actually listened to the lyrics closely, but it's like this sort of spirit that reincarnates through the ages. Seems like there's some sort of correlation there. Somewhere.
What's the name of the song? Highwayman?
Yeah, Highwayman. Yeah, I think it was Willie Nelson and Johnny Cash. There's a few country western singers singing it together, like as a homage to this spirit.
I was playing piano a lot in like from about 89 or 90 up until about, I don't know, 96. Yeah, after I moved out of my parents' house, I didn't have a piano, so I just kind of picked up an acoustic guitar because it was easier to, you know, having an apartment and being poor and stuff. And so I pretty much stopped playing piano completely and just picked up guitar. And when I picked up guitar, I didn't even really care so much about like writing songs. I had heard a couple of really neat, like I guess sonic texturing that caught my ear in some music, and I played with feedback and making a guitar basically sound like a whale, you know, like some kind of crazy whale in an echo chamber. But it's just basically like feedback swells. I love the way feedback swells sound if you do it right. It's pretty, I don't know. That and scraping on piano strings. That's what actually got me into a piano. When I was in grade school, we had music class, and the teacher we watched a video, and they were talking about some kind of a demonic, or like a, I can't think of the name of it now, but anyways, in the film they pulled the front panel off of the piano, and the guy was scraping the strings, you know, with his hands, and they would make that creepy sound, right? And I was like, whoa, we have a piano. So I went home and I started, like, you know, took the front panel off, and I started making that sound. And I think that's what really started it, because then after that I started I enjoyed watching like horror movies and like doing my own little I would do like the like my own soundtrack to horror movies.
Right. Huh.
Yeah.
How old was that?
That's probably when I was like 15 or 16, or I guess when I was a teenager, I was goofing around with that, making like just super creepy horror movie soundtracks.
And whose idea was it that you learned piano?
Nobody. They actually gave my brother piano lessons and me art lessons. And my brother didn't like the piano that much. So the piano just kind of sat around unattended, you know, just kind of collecting dust. And then I saw that film. And that was in grade school. So, you know, I had to have been probably 8 or 9 whenever I took the front cover off and started making the creepy sounds. And I'd still like making little horror movie sort of soundtracks just for fun.
When you were 8, you mean, or later?
Yeah, and all through my teenage years, I would just do creepy stuff. I love to go and light a candle, yeah. Especially on like rainy nights. I've always been like super, super weird. I don't try to be weird, but this is the kind of stuff like when I was like 15 or 16, I would do. For some reason, especially during like a really bad rainstorm and there was a lot of lightning, I like to turn off all the lights and light the candles, and I would put in all the TVs onto static and turn the static up real loud. And bang on the piano, especially like the low keys, and then do just make it sound like the most, I don't know, chilling, whatever the most chilling sounds that I could make the piano produce, you know.
Were you trying to freak yourself out or the opposite?
No, I loved it. I totally freaked my mom out though. My mom still to this day says that when I would go and do that, she would see spirits walk around the house.
Oh. Do you think that's what you were doing? Were you conjuring the spirits?
Yeah, I think so.
That's really weird because while you've been talking, I've been thinking two things. One is, well, I'll get to in a minute, but it has to do with making music for the ancestors. And the other was whether you'd ever done a Ouija board. And I don't know why I was thinking about that. But it just seems as though you had your own way of communicating with the spirits.
Yeah, I did. I've always thought, I mean, I don't know exactly how it works out, because I tell you honestly, my own perception of myself is that, you know, I'm just kind of a creepy, antisocial guy, and I'm almost like kind of an airhead. You know, I'm a goof. I just, you know, I don't really take myself too serious, but there's something... There, and I know that there always has been something just off about me, something that's fairly discernible even by other people, you know, just it's like I'm a walking vortex.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know.
Is that like being a receiver?
Yeah, that's exactly what I am. I'm a receiver. Because when I write songs, I don't even try. Mm-hmm. But you ever watch the shows where the guy is a savant and he just do all kinds of crazy math problems, mm-hmm. but he can't tie his shoes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like me. I mean, I'm like, I really sound like an idiot, but I write really good songs. I mean, and they just pop out, you know, it's just like, boop, transmission received. It's almost like I just download it almost.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I get the song almost instantly. And then all the work is trying to, like, you know, record it right, make it like actually play the parts, and just messing with all the software and all the effects, and just getting it to where it sounds good, you know. That's the hard part. You know what I mean?
Well, no, because I don't do that, so I don't have direct experience with that. But are you saying that the song comes easily to the extent that you can actually sing and play it if it has words very quickly and easily, and then after that it's the perfecting it. You don't have to work out how to sing it or what the tune is. You know all that very quickly.
Yeah, it's weird. It's not like I really know it. It's just kind of like, I don't know. I don't sit down and like the whole thing's there, you know, but I sit down and start noodling and like the next thing, you know, 2 hours later, it's like I have this polished, you know, done pop song.
Yeah.
Or, you know, not a pop song, but just a really good song, you know?
Yeah, so I mean, those dreams that I tell you I have, that's an experience. That'd be like a condensed experience of what you just described, where the whole song actually comes out in the process of playing it. So I'm dreaming that I'm playing the guitar and singing, and I'm actually hearing this song coming out. So it's like there's two parts of me, one that's actually creating the music and another part that's hearing it and thinking, oh wow, this is so amazing. Where's this coming from?
Oh wow.
Yeah, I can't
But
do it, you know.
you're actually aware that it's coming from you, huh?
Well, it's coming through me.
Oh.
I don't know where it's coming from in the dream. I'm just, well, yeah, I don't have a sense of it coming from somewhere else, but I certainly don't have a sense of creating it either, just of
Yeah.
receiving it.
Yeah, I hear songs and music in my dreams all the time, and sometimes when I wake up, I remember it. And what usually happens is like it's actually before my actual wake up time, but I'll wake up, because it's almost like the music itself wakes me up, right? And it's like I kind of like wake up and I'm still singing it, and I'm like, ah, oh, man, I should go write that down. And then I go back to sleep and forget it.
Of course.
It's like I wasn't
Classic.
supposed to remember it or drag it into this world or something. It's weird.
Is this guy David Costanza, Art of Flying? Does that, did I send you anything about him in the past?
I don't think so.
He told the story in the context of other things we were talking about, of I think he'd just written a song. And they're a really small band, you know, and he joked how often when they perform live, there's more people on stage than there are in the audience, you know?
Yeah.
So very marginal. And I think he described having this thought, he'd discovered or composed this song, and he was thinking, kind of, maybe he was feeling a bit despairing, and he was thinking, what's the point, you know, only five people are going to hear it. And he heard this voice say to him, something, I'm totally bowdlerizing his story now because I can't remember, I have to paraphrase, but saying something like, don't think like that, don't be absurd, you have no idea how much we love your music over here. And he had this epiphany. It was like, oh, I'm not playing for the living, I'm playing for the dead.
I've had that thought. I think that all the time because my peak hours of like creative, feeling creative are about like from 2 to 4 in the morning.
Right.
And I can almost feel like the audience, and it sounds crazy, but when I'm, and I have my guitar rig set up and I'm in the room playing and kind of making soundscapes going on in the room, I can almost feel them, it's like a little one man, it's like I'm putting on a show for the invisible world or whatever,
Right.
And a lot of my lyrics, I address that. I mean, I talk about it too. In a very, I mean, you could probably guess that my lyrics are going to be very mystical, occult sort of themed, but not real overt. It's kind of hard to sift through them and figure out what they actually mean. But there's a lot of famous musicians are mystically inclined, and they don't lay it out there, like some Lady Gaga song, but it's just more poetic and hidden meanings.
Yeah, I think it's probably more common than not, really, certainly
Yeah.
with a certain kind of musician or artist, that the part of the process inevitably entails like tuning into some other realm of being.
Yeah.
So then the language they're going to use to convey that is going to be somewhat otherworldly, I think. But what I was wondering, I'm sort of half here and half not, thinking about this, that because you said that when you were young, you did these weird performances, these cacophonies in the house, and your mother thought you were conjuring spirits.
Well, my mother actually says she saw a lady in white in a white dress walking down the hall to my room.
Right, so it's very
Yeah.
archetypal, the woman in white, no less. Did you ever investigate that, like later, like as far as who it might have been, if it was actually a, you know, an ancestor of some sort.
No, I didn't see her. My mom said she was walking down the hall towards my room.
Yeah, but you could have asked her. Maybe she recognized her. Anyway, I mean, there's probably all kinds of things you could discover if you look into this. But what I was going to ask was, how much you've considered, because there's sort of a spectrum here between performing, making music for the dead, making music that somehow on, or cacophony that conjures the dead, and some, I guess, in between would be how much music, specifically your music, might actually be giving voice to the dead.
Yeah.
Like they have the music, but they can't vocalize it because they don't have bodies.
Yeah. I thought about that too.
So do you think that your dream with the shaman in black and the Billy and all that, do you think that that correlates with this in some way? Like, what was he saying? You got to get on with it.
No, that was unrelated. John Lennon showed up and is basically telling me I need to get on with it. And so is Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
Ray Charles. Or no, wait. Was it Ray Charles? Or who did I say it was?
They're all dead, right?
Right.
Have you noticed if they have to be dead, the musicians, before they visit you?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I never really thought, I guess I just assumed that was the way it worked. I don't know. I haven't had a living musician visit me.
So. Well, there you go. Yeah.
But you and the Billy that I dreamed of before you emailed me that I was talking to,
yeah.
The old shamanic Billy, they'll have similar builds and just the look, you know, how kind of tall and lanky and skinny, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Look like you look like you don't eat enough, you know. Mm-hmm. You just kind of have that sort of peering, you know, almost have like this weird alien probing sort of way of like tilting your head, almost like, you know, how they sort of depict it in science fiction movies sometimes. You know who else looks like that? You know who else? And I was thinking this earlier when I was talking to you, is that Tom York from Radiohead. You know, have the same sort of, you know, I don't know what it is, you know, just, you know, have a similar look or a similar vibe. It looks like you just kind of belong to the same sort of, like if you're just looking at people and breaking them down superficially and their physiological sort of attributes and traits, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like when you look at, you know, a certain bird, you're like, well, that's a bluebird or that's a blackbird or, you know, that's a dove. Or, you know, I mean, if you think about a bird, you know, or like anybody's, I think I'm explaining more than I need to, but you know what I'm saying, right?
I know what you're saying. And there's some strong correlations there or whatever with, well, A, my friend Mark Lorne, he ran into that, what's his name, Radiohead guy, York, one time. Mm-hmm. So I didn't cross my path, but crossed somebody very close to my path. And then, of course, the name Radiohead, is that's the receiver, that's the musician who's the receiver. And he got the name for the band from Talking Heads song.
Hmm. Interesting.
And you know how I feel about Talking Heads. So yeah, you may be onto something there. That may be sort of an ancestral, you know, thread running through the musosphere.
Yeah, that's interesting because one of my songs, one of the four that I'm going to release here hopefully in the holidays, Melissa was listening to it. My wife was listening to it. And she goes, it kind of reminds me of Talking Heads. Kind of has that Talking Heads feel.
Oh, great. High praise.
Yeah, so you might like that one. told you, sometimes I wish I wouldn't have brought this up. I wish I wouldn't have told you this, but I was just being honest. But remember I told you when I was young, I had watched an episode of Ripley's Believe It or Not, and they showed the all the skulls and under in the catacombs in France. And this is like when I was really young, about I'd say like 9, 10, or 11. And when I got in the bath that night, I realized my mortality. Hmm. Do you remember that story?
Not particularly. Why did you wish you'd never told me that? Because it's so personal.
It is. I did. I told you in an early podcast, and I even remember because somebody at the Stormy Weather Forum was like, "Holy shit!" I thought he was kidding about that. But anyways, right. I recall the very moment that I realized my mortality. I was in the bath, and it was because I was thinking about that Ripley's Believe It or Not episode. You know, where it showed the skulls, and I had the strangest reaction to it. You know, I was sitting there and I realized my mortality, and I was crying in the bathtub, and I said, "Please, Lord Satan, save me from this earth."
Now I remember, yeah.
And I remember, and then like, it seems like I forgot it for a while. And you know, that could be a memory implant for all I know. I mean, everything's so freaking weird in my life that I don't even know what's really real, but. I think it's real. I think that really happened. And all right, I just sent you the song.
And why did you bring that up just now?
Because the very first song that I decided to work on, the name of the song is "Feel the Feelings Fade Away." Hmm. Right, but I'm calling it FFFA. Right. Hmm. Well, what number of the alphabet is F?
I don't know. A, B, C, D, E, F, 6, 5? 6. So it is 6. 6, 6, 6, 6, 6, 6, 1.
It's like I'm the original sort of, and I don't know. It kind of creeps me out, honestly. I mean, this really does creep me out. I don't understand why I constantly have so much like satanic symbolism follows me all through my life. It's just bizarro.
Yeah. Well, and same,
I think I've told you this before, but I feel like I'm like, it's just creepy, and it's totally, it's like nothing you want to bring up to people at a bar. But tell them, I just have this weird nagging feeling, and I have all these signs pop up through my life, like I'm Satan's sort of like his little, you know, his favorite cat or something, you know?
Yeah, I do know.
That's really strange. Or like, you know, I'm just like a special project, or Satan's always there, kind of, you know, just watching me and seeing what's up.
But you're not a Christian, though.
No.
So you're an agnostic, Gnostic. So Satan doesn't mean the same thing to you as it does to most Christians or most people.
No, probably not. I mean, it's always a changing, you know, I use the word Satan just because it's attached to the sort of imagery and I don't know, it's Mars and Satan, you know what I mean? Everywhere I go, it's Mars and Satan.
Interesting. It's about so Mars weird. But was that before Sweater was the Mars thing, or did it start with Sweater?
No, it was before, because remember you kind of talked about how I sort of had a personality was very Martian like. Yeah. And then I had never seen my astrological or my chart before that. And I looked at it, and it was like this big red triangle pointing straight at Mars. Yeah. I had like a half a dozen or seven, or I don't know how many, but it's like a handful or six planets that were opposing or warring with Mars in my chart.
Squaring, probably.
Yeah, that's what.
Yeah, yeah. Right, so, yeah, I mean, one of the archetypal deities that kind of unifies Satan and Mars would be Horus. Like, Horus corresponds with Mars in many, you know, sort of system, whatever. In many ways, it corresponds with Mars, god of war, obviously. Mm-hmm. But Horus also, I mean, if you look into Crowley and stuff, as I have, Horus corresponds a lot with Satan, although it was actually Set was his brother, but you know, they were like twins, so it gets a bit complicated. But anyway, you know, I was very heavily identified with Lucifer. And that, you know, those sixes still, they still dog me. I mean, recently it was actually corresponded weirdly with this pack of marijuana that came into my hands a few months ago through the thrift store. I guess everything comes to us eventually in the thrift store, and it was this super skunk marijuana, and I haven't smoked for years and years, and but I had thought maybe a few days or weeks earlier, I thought, you know, what would it be like to get high now? I just had that thought, right? And the next thing I know, this marijuana comes, and I'm thinking, oh my God, is it a sign? You know, I'm supposed to smoke, right?
Holy shit. Hey, yeah. I hate to interrupt you, but yeah. The exact fucking thing happened to me a few months ago.
Oh.
Almost exactly.
Oh, okay. Well, let me finish and tell me if you had this part too. And then I guess it was that day, because it was like a perfect storm. I was making my smoothie in the morning, as I do every morning, green smoothie. And as it finished, I saw the numbers on the digital dial as 666. And I had not realized until that point that my smoothie maker counts the times it's used. Basically, it's a number that just keeps growing. But I had never noticed that until the sixes came up. Obviously, that caught my eye, right? And so I put it all together, and I'm like, okay, so the marijuana, the, you know, thing about weed, then the weed comes to me, and I'm thinking, is it a sign from the gods? And then I get the sixes, and I put it all together, and I realize, okay, no, I'm not smoking the marijuana. This is what these synchromystics, they just keep getting lured into these things. Everything's meaningful, you know, it's a sign. And so then they generate their own confirmations, and actually more often than not, they're snares, you know, they're traps to see if you'll actually fall for it. And that was how I understood it. Okay, nice try, Satan. Better luck next time. Anyway, so what happened with you? Did you end up smoking it?
Yeah, a little bit. It wasn't a big deal. I mean, but it just, you know, just the opportunity arose, and you know, I didn't even really try. But I smoked for the first time in probably 10 years, and I was like, you know, it's okay. But I made really sure to not smoke much at all. I mean, I was very, very judicious about
microdose, how much I smoked. Right.
Yeah, basically what I did was I took a tiny small amount, and I actually kind of like just held the lighter under it and let the smoke kind of float up, and then kind of hovered above it and just took a little breath in, you know.
Wow.
Just enough to just that, so that all I felt was like that slight bit of disassociation, just barely.
Well, that,
because if I really do smoke, I get really, really like paranoid.
Hmm.
You know?
I do know, yeah.
Yeah, I get crazy paranoid.
Have you ever felt like you were possessed when you smoked, like something came in and took you over?
No, but I have seen like just the weirdest. It's almost like I'm watching a show, you know, unfold in my mind, you know, and it's like, it's hard to describe, but it looks like a corny, almost like a teenage occultist sort of cartoon show going, you know, where it's like, you know, there'll be like an angels and demons and all the geometric shapes, and the big devil dragon guy shows up, and the angel cuts his head off, and all, and then he kind of breaks into smaller pieces, and it's just like, it looks like a silly psychedelic cartoon that some teenagers would put together. Almost, it's like that, like overtly kind of goofy mystical looking stuff, you know, going on.
While you close your eyes and.
Yeah.
Watch it play out on the screen. Yeah.
Right.
Well, I guess if I had smoked, I mean, that would have been the way to do it, what you did, but that wouldn't have been the way I'd have done it. If I'd fallen for that temptation, I would have gone all out, whole hog, you know, as you say I always do, you know, just throw myself in right at the deep end and let's have the full experience. And I'm very glad I didn't, because the thing is I really have come to an understanding or a knowing about marijuana and me, like it's just not for me. So it would have been actually going against that.
Yeah.
Like the amount of insights and revelations I've had on marijuana that now amount to absolutely nothing. I see them as having had no value whatsoever, and yet I can still look back and I remember how they felt.
Yeah, which is funny because, you know, the way I just described the vision, kind of, I don't know, in a weird way, it is symbolic of how you just described your
right.
You know, profound encounters on marijuana. It's almost like because my visions almost look like a silly high school parody of, like, you know, occultism, you know, and right. occult symbolism and stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's exactly how I describe them. Just like silly, trivial.
Yeah,
you know.
But presumably, when you're having it, doesn't feel that, or was it a bit of both? Like, it must have been quite fascinating to watch the imagery.
Yeah, it was fascinating to watch, but at the same time, it was almost a lot like just being at a Pink Floyd laser light show at the planetarium. You know, and you're watching it, but, you know, and it's like, ah, cool, and then. You know, but at the same time, yeah, it's kind of cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, do you think that you've changed in the ensuing 10 years to the point that now you can see that for what it is, whereas in the past you'd have just got pulled into the light show and just been, wow.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, like what I've done now is, or where I'm at now is, I just don't care about, let me see. What is the main thing that really gets on my nerves is like, oh my God, this is it. This is the answer. The revelation we've all been waiting for. Hey everybody, we got it now, man. Here it is. Here's the answer we've all been waiting for. Woo.
Yeah.
That and like any kind of imagery, words are pretty much meaningless. I don't really care. People talk and blah, blah, blah. Okay, sure. I don't care. You know, what I'm really more interested in now is just like hearing people's real stories and just be genuine about like your real experiences. Mm. And let's just compare notes. You know what I mean? Let's see if we can figure out if we all compare notes and sort of triangulate our experiences. Right. Because I approach it now to where it's like, simultaneously the most profound thing in the world and utterly irrelevant, you know? It's like life itself. You know what I mean? It's like my life is so profound and meaningful right now, and then I know. You can't argue. In 100 years from now, I'm gonna be rotting in ground and there probably won't even be anybody that remembers me. Mm-hmm. You know? Unless my music or art take off. You know what I'm saying? Like, so however profound and meaningful I think this experience is right now, I know that it's just going to evaporate into nothing, possibly. I mean, yeah, probably. Right. That's kind of what my song is about, that I just sent to you. Mm-hmm. It's about how feelings, everything feels so real and intense. And if you just sit there and just think about the feelings, like, okay, I feel angry right now. But I know that tomorrow I won't feel angry, so why would I want to do anything rash, you know? Mm-hmm. Why do I want to punch a hole in the wall just because I feel mad right now? Because it's just going to make more work for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I do.
It's a lot about impulse control and waiting and just kind of like putting a pause button on your reactions and your thoughts. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean, but there's more to it, though, isn't there? Because it seems to me that, the reason to put a pause on those reactions isn't only so that you don't do something that you'd regret later, because in the context that you've you've put forward. It wouldn't matter anyway if you did. I mean, why not just act on your anger and punch in a hole in the wall? Because 10 years further on down the line, you won't care that you punched a hole in the wall, right?
Well, yeah, that's true. But those 2 hours you spend patching up the hole in the wall, I'd rather spend it noodling on my guitar or riding my bike.
Sure. So there's a pragmatic thing, but I still think there's a deeper thing there, which is, to me anyway, which is that inhibiting those automatic reactions, not only does it prevent regrettable consequences, but it also allows for another response. Like something else will come up and out instead of the anger, instead of the impulsive, right?
Right.
And then you get to discover something that's deeper.
Yeah.
So that... And there was something that you said in about the that you're going to be dead and forgotten, and you know, in 100 years, and so nothing's really that profound. I didn't really say it like that,
but I'm just saying that, like, however intense something might feel to me right now,
you know,
or however like dire everything is.
I know, but are you aware of there's a paradox in that experience that you're describing?
Sure, I find now there's a paradox in everything. Everything seems to be a catch-22 of sorts, you know?
Yeah, well, not necessarily a catch-22, but it might be that the paradox is actually the opening, I don't know. But the realization that any profound realization you're having that seems so intense isn't that profound in the context of eternity. That in itself is a profound realization. That's my experience. It's one that never changes, really, because I have it every day in similar, different, parallel circumstances that you just described. Like, I don't know if I'll be able to conjure an example, but it's just so similar that I'm thinking about whatever I'm doing and how meaningful it is, and then I think, well, wait a minute, yes, it is right now, but don't forget that this is in the context of an infinite eternal mystery that you're just a blip within, and therefore, you know, that's clearly not it. Whatever it is that I'm getting excited about isn't it. And so then my attention goes to it. This is my point. My attention does go to it, even if the it that it goes to is something I can't think about. I can only kind of, well, I can think about it, but it's in kind of, so almost in negative terms, like you said, like, wait, I'm just going to be reduced to nothing.
Yeah, when you say, you know, your mind goes to it almost sounds like you're referring back to that state of perfect absence again, you know, like we were talking about, you know, the big hive mind at rest, you know, without any tentacles and no thoughts. It's just like, you know, that's it, huh?
Could be. I don't know if it's a hive mind, though. I'd say that we've got to be careful about describing the ear.
Yeah.
Particularly if you're saying it's an absence, because a hive is, wow, there's a lot of presence in a hive. So I'd say it's a still point of consciousness that, well,
actually, now that I think about it, I just had this thought that the perfect state of the state of perfect absence can never be had again by it. Once it decided to reach its tentacles out and acquiring experiences, it can never go back to that state of perfect absence, can it?
I think we've got another paradox there, because if everything that extends from that perfect absence that we're calling it, then also it would never lose it. That would be the whole point of extending.
Yeah. But also, why would it want to get away from the perfect absence in the first place? And if it didn't know of experience, what would make it have the idea to acquire experience?
These are questions that theologians have been wrestling with for all of time.
Right, right. Once upon a time, I could get it right. The air was fresh,
simple souls, wide and free. Now all Mars wants to do is sleep. He ripped my heart out one last time. I put you loose, but you don't mind. I put you loose, but you don't mind.
Yeah. And you know, I forgot that I was supposed to be like, I came in with the idea of being like Elon Musk in his interviews. You ever watched Elon Musk in any of his interviews?
No.
Yeah, he talks, he has some pretty interesting thoughts on AI, and he basically has come to the same conclusion that basically we're just a rung in the stepladder of evolution, and that, you know, we're just, you know, on the way to creating a better, you know, whatever, something else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But whenever somebody asks him a question, or at least the interview I watch, you know, he kind of like squints his eyes and thinks for like 5 or 6 seconds and before he even says anything at all, he kind of goes, okay, now I got, you know, something.
Right. He's probably listening to the little implant in his ear.
He didn't think about that. That's kind of what it's like. But he kind of reminded me of you, because see, you're not a real fast, you know, you always talker. Seem like, you know, you're more thoughtful. I'm just like a knee-jerk reaction. I'm like, blah, 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 blah.
I'd say you've been pretty thoughtful today.
So maybe yeah, I'm trying. To not be such a motor mouth. But I still find myself getting, you know, I can feel myself, I can tell I'm getting like worked up, like when I start talking about something that actually kind of excites me, you know, like something that kind of gets my, you know, get me tingling, or my hair stands up because I'm thinking about like the ghost walking down the hall. Or I didn't tell you this part, another thing, you know, where the Satan stuff keeps popping up, you know. Like I like riding bikes a lot. I ride road bikes. I do like 25-mile rides, and so I wanted to get a real nice bike, and I bought this bike used while I still lived up in Fort Worth. And it was, the name of the bike was that town in France, Marseille. It was like, that's the model of the bike, was the Marseille. And I swear, Jason, it didn't even fucking dawn on me until about 2 years after I had this bike. Something, I had like a shirt hung over it, and I looked at it and I realized that it was fucking Mars. It was like Mars. I was like, you gotta be fucking kidding me, right? And then I bought a guitar used, right? And I bought this nice Gretsch guitar that I'd had my eye on, and it has these three knobs, you know, like two tone knobs and a volume knob. And it's a Gretsch guitar, right? Well, each of the little knobs, there's a G with a little, almost like a little arrow pointing, you know, like for the direction.
Yeah.
And I didn't even realize until a couple of months after I had it, I looked at it and all the knobs were like lined up the same way. And it's a red guitar.
Yeah.
Well, the G's on the knobs, I looked at it one day and I realized that the G's also look like sixes. And when the knobs are all turned the same way, it said, I was looking at 666 staring me straight in the face.
Yeah.
And they all have like the little pitchfork, little points on them, you know?
Yeah, that reminds me of, the pitchfork thing reminds me of when I was living in Guatemala with these women. I guess it was before they all showed up, but there was this one woman who came, stayed the night with me and stuff. And she'd heard all these stories about how I was the devil. I don't know how she'd heard these stories, but obviously my reputation had preceded me, so she was afraid to come back with me. And when she got back, weird stuff started happening, and I had several cats and they started going crazy and they were running up and down the roof. Anyway, she was freaking out. And anyway, long story short, we got through the night. It was actually a very pleasant night. The next day, she was still a bit wigged out, and I gave her a mint. I offered her a mint. I had this packet of mints, And I said, do you want a mint? And she took the mint, and it was, they were extra strong mints, and there was a little picture of a devil on them with a picture. She's like, ah, I knew it.
John, that's fucking funny, man. That's so weird.
But you know, this devil iconography, I think one thing to leaven it or to put it in perspective, it's everywhere. And it's everywhere for a reason. And so is the kind of archetypal possession complex, or whatever we're going to call it. It's so prevalent now. Like, if you were to do a survey and talk to 1,000 potheads, psychedelic users or whatever, find out how many had thought that they were the devil or the devil's favorite cat, you'd probably find it was like 40% or something, like a huge number. Mm-hmm. That's what I found out in later years, that my whole being the one messiah complex, it's just really quite mundane and ordinary. It's just so surprisingly common.
Yeah. I wonder how, like, even if my little experience where I sort of baptized myself to Satan in the bathtub, I wonder how much of that could have been influenced by subliminal programming. Because when I was young, I was watching a cartoon, and I consciously noticed this. I'm pretty sure it was a Woody Woodpecker cartoon. They were in a hotel, and they walked by a room, and it was 666 on the door.
Right.
And the thing that really made me go, like, what the hell's going on, was because during a commercial break, there was a commercial for something, and like in the phone number, the string of numbers, there was a 6. It would be the only number that would blink, and it would blink 3 times.
Right.
You know?
You noticed that as a kid?
Yeah, I totally noticed that.
Wow. But you also had some religious upbringing, didn't you?
Right.
Yeah, because that'll do it. I mean, I was looking to Aleister Crowley, you know. When he was a kid, his mother was a fanatical Christian, and she caught him masturbating, and she beat him and called him the beast after that. Uh-huh. You little beast, you beast, you beast, you beast. So, you know, he grows up thinking he's the great beast and creating his own religion.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, not to say it's entirely causal, but you certainly wouldn't just leave that out of the...
Yeah, I know. I agree. It permeates everything, and I know it is everywhere.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's by accident. They do it on purpose.
Yeah,
I don't know who exactly they are, or how much influence they seem to have, complete influence, actually. But,
well, it seems like that, but I think that's one of the tricks that we play on ourselves, because it's a chicken or an egg thing. If it was in the culture because it's in the psyches of, you know, everybody in the culture, then it would seem like it would literally be everywhere. And the very people who are implementing these mind control and these, you know, the subliminals and all that, they'd have it in them, making them do it. Right. So then it's kind of just like a virus that's just being passed around, you know, and it never goes away because everybody's touching everybody, and somebody's always got it at some time or another, and it would keep spreading. And I think it is, you know, that's what the end times are. I think that's when something just keeps progressing and progressing, it reaches a critical stage where the system's completely taken over by whatever it is that we're talking about. We still don't know what it is, of course.
Mm-hmm.
The mystery, I identify it as trauma, but that doesn't explain where the trauma came from. But see, now we'd come back to where we started, and we have the problem, we have the shadow of the, you know, the hypothetical intelligence that's extending itself into creation. At what point did the original sin thing get installed in the program, and how and why?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's as big a mystery as the original manifestation, isn't it? I mean, because why would anything go wrong if everything comes from, you know?
Exactly. It's a great point. Think about it too.
Maybe everything hasn't gone wrong.
Yeah,
and that's the most fucked up.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Blech.
So I was going to say one other thing, possibly to leave you with it, but maybe it won't be that meaningful if I say it. But the thing about you being Mars occurred to me today. It's curious because, yeah, I did see that in you. Like, yeah, Carrie's really Martian and everything seemed to fit. But there's another thing about you that I've always been aware of and I was aware of today, which is you're quite passive. And also, and that fits with the being a receiver, like, you know, receptive, passive, they're almost synonymous. So what is that? Because Mars is the opposite of passivity. Mars is all action, all proactive, doing, changing, making things happen, attacking, you know, purpose driven. It's absolute purpose, right? And so you're a walking contradiction.
Yeah.
But they may be related. Maybe that.
Yeah. Well, I think of myself as like the quintessential, what they call a fence straddler, you know.
I do know what they call them.
You know? Yeah. And that's I'm the person that everybody's always screaming at, saying, "Pick a side."
Right.
And I don't want to pick a side.
Both sides, right?
I don't really feel like it.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah. Well. So you're waiting for a cause that's worth fighting for.
It may be. I don't know.
Well, if you're Mars, you've got to be fighting for something. Unless Mars is turning over a new leaf, maybe that's what's happening.
Well, listen to the lyrics in my song. It's funny that that should come up. Listen to the lyrics in the second verse of the song I just sent you. Yeah, it'll all come full circle.
I hear a voice that's not my own that tells me to jump into the sea. I'm tired of listening to these words. I know they aren't meant for me. I know they aren't meant for me. I won't listen. I know they all come from long ago and only resonate now. But it's hard to tell which thoughts are my own when I keep hearing everyone else. I keep hearing everyone else. I won't listen. Family of one speaks with only one voice.